This is Serene Caldwell welcoming you to episode 10 in the end of season 1 of the Soul Salons, exploring our spiritual heritage. I hope you have valued these presentations over the past 6 months or so, and that they have been meaningful to you at some level, or at least taught you something that you didn't know. The last episode I presented focused on the 20th century mystic Thomas Merton, but today I'm taking you way back in time to ancient Egypt, or over 5,000 years. You may recall at the introduction to this series that I said that these episodes wouldn't necessarily be in any chronological order. In the beginning of the series, I also mentioned a book called The Spiritual Heritage of the Human Race. It has been one resource that I use for these podcasts, and I'm drawing from it in this episode to summarize some of the religious traditions of ancient Egypt. My husband and I actually went on a trip to Egypt quite a number of years ago. I have some very fond memories of things like riding a donkey down into the Valley of the Kings and taking a boat on the Nile and swimming in the Red Sea. But in hindsight, I wish I had known what I now know about Egyptian civilization. I think it would have made the trip a bit more meaningful to me. I was just basically a tourist at that time. Anyway, back to Egyptian civilization. It flourished for over 3,000 years, and maybe that was due in part to its rich spiritual heritage. I hope I can share some of that with you today. The underlying worldviews of the ancient Egyptians was based on a realm called First Time, or Tep-Zepi. The myth posits that the earth was covered with primeval waters until a creator or divine mind brought order and light out of chaos and darkness. In one tradition, the creator god was called Atum, who was also identified with Ra, the sun god, who was more manifest to humans. This combination of a manifest and hidden entity, also sometimes referred to as Ra-Atum, did not, however, preclude the existence of lesser gods. Egyptian religion included many different deities. I'll share a quote from the Book of the Dead, which I'll refer to later, and it talks about the creation myth that I just noted. The word came into being, all things were mine when I was alone. I was Ra in all his manifestations. I was the great one who came into being of himself, who created all his names as the companies of the lesser gods. Some of these lesser gods included figures like Osiris and Isis and Seth and Nephthys. These were all brothers and sisters who married each other, apparently, which sounds kind of gross in our time. But then again, their parents were Nut, the sky, and Geb, the earth. So it's kind of hard to say if these gods and goddesses were meant as symbols or if they had a real incarnation. Osiris, for example, was very connected with agriculture. I'll just provide a quick summary here, but there's a long soap opera-like story about how the evil brother Seth killed his good brother Osiris and scattered his body parts throughout Egypt. Osiris was eventually avenged by his son Horus, who became a pharaoh, and like his father before him, he upheld an ethical, social, and religious order based on truth, justice, and peace. Pharaohs throughout Egyptian history were often seen as having a divine mandate and were worshipped as gods themselves in many ways. As I've noted before here on the Soul Salons, I strive to find and feature great women in the spiritual heritage of the human race. They are much rarer than I would like, of course. So since I've mentioned Isis, she was the wife of Osiris and was said to have magical powers and an ability to heal the sick. She became one of the most important deities in ancient Egypt, and throughout the Greco-Roman world, too. Temples were built in her honor, and she had far-reaching influence. In my research, I came across a translation of a set of hymns by a scholar named James Dennis. I'll just read a portion of one of them in which the goddess Isis is apparently speaking about her husband Osiris. "Gods together with men are with thee. No harm cometh unto them from thy shining, nor from thy journeying in the celestial boat above. Thy enemies have ceased to be, for I am protecting thee, O Ra, Lord. Come thou to us as a babe, thou first great sun god. Depart not from us who behold thee. There proceedeth from thee the strong Orion in heaven at evening, at the resting of every day. Lo, it is I, at the approach of the Sothis period, who doth watch for him. Nor will I leave off watching for him, for that which proceedeth from thee is revered. An emanation from thee causeth life to gods and men, reptiles and animals, and they live by means thereof. Come thou to us from thy chamber in the day when thy soul begetteth emanations. The whole hymn is much longer, but I just wanted to read a portion of it for the poetic imagery it conveys. On the subject of goddesses, there was also a goddess named Mayet, whom I particularly liked because she was the goddess of cosmic equilibrium. In an entry on Mayet, Wikipedia notes that she represented the ethical and moral principles that every Egyptian citizen was expected to follow throughout their daily lives. It goes on to say, the ancient Egyptians had a deep conviction of an underlying holiness and unity within the universe. Cosmic harmony was achieved by correct public and ritual life. Any disturbance in cosmic harmony could have consequences for the individual as well as the state. In our modern society, we really don't seem to think like this anymore, but sometimes I wish that we did. In other words, are our behaviors, individually and collectively, messing up the cosmic equilibrium? It's kind of interesting to think about. When I was doing research for this episode of the Soul Salons, I was pretty amazed at the religious and moral foundations of Egyptian society. My husband kept pointing out the bad elements of Egyptian life, but that doesn't necessarily preclude that they still had a code of conduct. And besides, I am largely focusing on the positive in this series. If you want smut and violence, there are a lot of places you can go to find that. But speaking of finding things, finding spiritual texts from the ancient Egyptian world was tricky. It was a bit like putting a puzzle together because it seems to be in fragments here and there. Unlike some other traditions, there is no famous Egyptian writer who has a recognized body of work, like Plato in the Greek world, for example. I did mention the Book of the Dead earlier, which is an important source of reflections on the afterlife, and thus spiritual in its own way. I understand that this book was a compilation of texts that were placed in the tombs of the deceased. They are essentially spells and rituals that help the dead journey to Duat, or the underworld. Now, when I heard underworld, the first thing I thought of was hell, but I don't think it should be interpreted that way, even though it is called the underworld. This place had various parts, and one could have a good or bad experience there, depending on the weighing of one's heart, and the degree to which one had lived, or not lived, a life based on truth and justice. In the Egyptian tradition, it is said that when the soul goes to the afterlife or the underworld, it is weighed, and if it is found that it is heavier than the feather of truth, it falls to the ground and is eaten by monsters. So there's not the same sense of redemption as there is in other traditions, which is a little bit depressing. But taking you on a more hopeful vein, there are also some uplifting passages from the Book of the Dead, or at least I thought so. Here's one. O Lord of Amentet, the underworld, I am in thy presence, there is no sin in me, I have not lied wittingly, nor have I done aught with a false heart. Grant that I may be like unto those favored ones who are round about thee, and that I may be an Osiris, greatly favored of the beautiful God and beloved of the Lord of the world. And here's another one. I like how some of these texts sound like prayers. Grant thou that I may come unto the heaven which is everlasting, and unto the mountain where dwell thy favored ones. May I be joined unto those shining beings, holy and perfect, who are in the underworld. And may I come forth with them to behold thy beauties when thou shinest at eventide and goest to thy mother, Nut. The Egyptians believed that our life on earth was just one part of a longer journey, and that a soul or eternal force resided in every human being. Souls, they felt, had several different spiritual aspects. I found different names and descriptions for these, but some that I came across were the Ba, equivalent to one's personality, the Sekhem, or one's vital power, the Ren, one's secret name, and the Ka, essentially one's guardian angel. I've heard about and learned about the soul and the soul's journey through my whole life, really, and this is the first time I've come across this idea that the soul has different parts. I always just think of it as one thing, so this was kind of an interesting discovery for me. As with most episodes of the Soul Salons, I also look for ancient wisdoms that can be applied to our own lives and time. On that note, I was happy to discover a book called Writings from Ancient Egypt, compiled by Toby Wilkinson. One chapter of this book is called The Teachings of Patohep, who reportedly was a chief minister who lived around 2400 BC. Egyptian society was very hierarchical at the time, and these teachings were largely in the form of guidance given to young men who were to assume public office. At the time, there was only a small literate elite who could write in complex hieroglyphics. But if one can discount the elitism of that society, there are moral codes in the teachings of Ptolemy that I found pretty relevant and interesting to our time. As in all societies, whether one kept these principles or not was open to question, but they still existed. Being moderate in one's speech was one important teaching. Here's some text on that idea. If you are powerful, gain respect through knowledge and pleasant speech. Do not command unless it befits. Hostility gets you into trouble. Do not be arrogant, lest you be humiliated. Do not be silent, lest you be rebuked. When you reply to the speech of a hothead, avert your face and control yourself. The ire of the hothead sweeps by. He who treads carefully, his path is clear. And here's a similar passage. Do not repeat slander, nor listen to it, for it is the outburst of a hot temper. Report only a matter you have seen, not merely heard. So how many times do we do that on social media? There are other passages in this work related to using speech wisely that seem particularly applicable to an internet era. Another theme in the teachings of Ptolemy is warning against the vices of lust and greed, such as in the following. If you want your conduct to be good, rescued from evil, guard against the vice of greed. It is a grave and incurable disease. There are no treatments for it. It afflicts fathers and mothers and uncles. It drives apart wife and husband. It is a mix of everything evil, a combination of everything hateful. The man endures whose rule is truth, who walks in a straight line. Thus he will make a testament. The greedy has no tomb. Of course, greed is one of the seven deadly sins in the Christian tradition, but it goes back here almost 5,000 years to ancient Egypt. Avoiding greed isn't new advice, in other words. There's one of the teachings of Ptolemy that I quite liked that I will end with, and that is focused on using time wisely. Follow your heart as long as you live. Do no more than is asked. Do not stint from following your heart. Wasting time is bad for the spirit. And thank you for your time today. I hope you've gained some important new insights on ancient Egyptian worldviews. Have a blessed day.